right, everybody, we got to talk wrestling cards as we record this, or as this goes live, I guess, on the other side of this is WrestleMania, which is the biggest spectacle in sports entertainment. So the showcase of immortals, there's so many more ways we could describe it. The ultimate thrill ride, if you want to use one that is probably the most forgettable. But we're going to talk about wrestling cards, and anything else we get into. And of course, I'm joined by my man, WWE Gelman, Adam Gelman, Sports Card Uncensored on the Twitter machine or X or whatever you want to call it. But Adam, welcome. How are you?
I am doing awesome. It's the most wonderful time of the year, right? It's like Christmas for us. But it's great to be back on the show, and thanks for having me on.
For sure. I think, I don't know, there's so many places we can start, but maybe we start here because we were just kind of reminiscing on just the last few weeks and just the buildup to this WrestleMania. I can't remember a buildup going into a WrestleMania as exciting as this one. There's been so much momentum, great storylines from the main event to the mid card, all the way down the line. It just feels like we're going to see something special this weekend. And I think WrestleMania is a brand where it's like, no matter what has happened right. The months before it, you're going to get excited because it's WrestleMania. But this one seems like it hits a little different. What do you have to say about just kind of what has happened post Royal Rumble up until where we're at now?
I mean, when I saw the schedule and I saw Royal Rumbles like end of January or whatever, and then there's like only Elimination Chamber, which was outside of the U.S., and then there's WrestleMania. There's only like we're going like way back in time because they used to do like these monthly pay-per-views. There would be like a ton of like stuff happening, moving pieces. This time they were just like, we're going to go straight through. And I think what we always had the problem with was they would have the Royal Rumble and then they would have no plan for what was going to happen for all of the individual people in the main matches until the WrestleMania actually happened. And the crazy thing is, like, you know, if you go back to like the late 90s, they used to like put them in tag team matches and can they coexist and whatever. And, you know, I never liked that. This year they have really ratcheted up like the storytelling, which is why I am always so attached to WWE. Like I like, there are people out there that love the matches. There are people out there that watch wrestling for wrestling. I watch wrestling for the angles and for the entrances and all the spectacle of it. So like this, like giving The Rock and Roman Reigns as much time as they have in the ring, uninterrupted, like just straight promos. Like that's why I watch wrestling. So for me, this has been a build for WrestleMania that's been unlike anything we've seen in the last 10, 15 years. And I'm absolutely in love with the way that it's been presented. We're talking about like new camera angles and like all sorts of all these fun, really aspects of the thing that have changed since Triple H has really taken over, and it's been insanely successful.
Yeah, it's fun. I think you take the way you've watched the product is like you take it for granted and it just becomes normal until they try something new, like backstage shots, following the wrestler with the camera, and just like a more intimate way to introduce what you're in the story you're trying to convey.
Create that connection. Yeah.
To us, the audience member. So there's been so many times on this road, whether it's been Cody Rhodes in the ring, whether it's been Roman Reigns backstage with Paul Heyman, whether it's been The Rock, you know, outside in the rain in Chicago, where it's legitimately felt like the performer on the other side is communicating to me and only me. And I feel like when you're able to do that, it just builds so much momentum and excitement. I think, obviously, I'm not the only one feeling it. And you're not the only one feeling it. Right. It does feel like one of the biggest WrestleManias that we could ever have.
Yeah. And I think like they've told this story to build these emotional connections on like every level, right? So it's not just The Rock and Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. Drew McIntyre's on like one of his best runs in history. I can watch Drew McIntyre do anything at this point. Like that guy is lighting a fire under everybody and it's amazing. CM Punk was supposed to be the focus, and it's crazy that like he's still there and he had an awesome segment, but like, it's not like they still managed to do this. And, you know, we always hear about like plans change, pal, right? Like that's always the thing. But like, it seems like they've had a plan for this WrestleMania for like a year, and they've been slowly building and building and building and building. And like this long-term sort of storytelling that's become a meme in wrestling communities, like it's really sort of had roots in this build for WrestleMania 40. And I'm jealous. Like I'm jealous I can't be there. It's absolutely incredible.
So we're going to save, I got to get like a couple predictions for you. And we'll save that for the end. So don't let me forget. Okay. Maybe we start here. Just in talking about cards, I'm curious, because it's undeniable that the product is so good, and we're enjoying it more than ever, and we're really looking forward to this WrestleMania. Does that momentum we've seen just on the product, does that have any side effect or ancillary impact on just wrestling cards in the community from anything you've seen, or are we too early?
You know, it's a really good question. And I think we were discussing this in your Patreon group, plug that. But like, it's something that I think has really started to take hold in wrestling more than it has. And that's kind of like these playoffs, right? It's like the Royal Rumble to WrestleMania has kind of been the playoff season. But traditionally, like I said, it's kind of been a meandering mess. Now it's finally feeling like we're in the postseason. We're on the verge of the Super Bowl here. And like, so you would expect that when TV is on fire like this, selling out every show, the crowds are hot, like it's awesome. Like you would expect like the playoff bump to happen in cards. And I mean, I think we're just starting to see the impact of Panini on the wrestling card community, because for a long time, Topps really catered to wrestling collectors as a niche. Like they're going to provide the things that wrestling collectors really gravitated towards. And Panini was the first ones to come in and say, no, we're going to sort of turn it on its head. We're going to bring this much more to the mainstream. We want more people, more eyes, more, you know, legacy products that people can tie between the sports. And as a result, like rookie cards have taken off. Like you see people chasing down rookies, whether it's, you know, a playing card because wrestling's weird, or, you know, a trivia game card, all the way up through like, hey, how do we differentiate an NXT card from a main roster card, changes in gimmicks, all of this stuff. So like all of that discussion has really taken a hold in wrestling over the last couple of years, because Panini has really fostered this new approach that wrestling collectors really weren't ever really needing to understand. Now with so many people coming in from other sports and other aspects of the hobby, they expect to draw parallels between what they were collecting in their own, you know, previous mainstream sports and now. So when you think of like, hey, if somebody's really, you know, hitting home runs, scoring touchdowns, like doing all the things on the field that you would expect them to, and their potential is meeting the hype, you would expect card values to go up in NBA and NFL. In wrestling, because it's all predetermined, and you know, the fighting is the fighting, but I mean, the outcomes are predetermined. Like people haven't necessarily always taken that to be like, oh, this person is really doing well. But because WWE has now started to put performers in positions to highlight their contributions to the TV product more frequently, we're starting to see like, Rhea Ripley and Tiffany Stratton specifically have really seen huge bumps recently, because they have been featured in ways that we've never seen people featured in the women's side. And then on the men's side, with The Rock coming back and really being a fixture on TV for the first time in what, 15 years? Like it's really seen a huge transition towards this new culture of wrestling, where it's like, hey, we have to reward this performance with extra value that we're purchasing on the secondary market. So I think we're starting to see that. I think as this continues, and as we continue to develop this niche and continue to develop this community, we'll see that much more frequently. But right now, it's just starting to get going, and I think we're getting there.
So I've been trying to explore this question of like that you were just digging into. And one way I looked at it was like just try to look at some sales history. And I went to Card Ladder and I did a filter in the last month. Basically, since The Rock has been on TV, what have we seen on the sales side? And what I wanted to look at, of course, there's so many rock cards that sell, but I like wanted to hit like a qualifier. So I just hit like $300 and above. How many cards, how many sales have we had? And just in the last, I don't know, if you were to tell me this number a year ago or 2 years ago, I would have said there's absolutely no way. But in like the last 30 days, there's been not in $300 cards and above, there's been $90,000 in rock cards selling. And you know that you can look at the PSA 8 gold that sold on 22 gold that sold on PWCC yep. as one example. But that like that, just looking at it from like that level, like told me that like, okay, there is a level of confidence that people have putting their money into wrestling cards right now that they might not have had 1 or maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's a really good observation because it kind of showcases how people are looking at specific value spectrums in wrestling. Because I've said this on here before, is like, if you go back to, you know, even the beginning of the ultra modern era, which I think is like 2013 and beyond, Roman Reigns is kind of rookie, like having a four-figure sale in wrestling cards before Panini took over was once a year, maybe. Like, you know, it was modern wrestling cards just didn't sell that big. And, you know, boxes were $50 and everybody was sort of just saying, hey, I can rip cases of this stuff for the price of a box of, you know, National Treasures or whatever. And now it's completely different because if you look at like The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, like you're starting to see people wanting to spend higher amounts of money on single cards. So we saw that PSA 8. We saw, you know, a bunch of Prism cards. I think there's been like 38 five-figure sales from Prism and WWE since 2022, which is insane because prior to that, Drake buying the Roman Reigns Super Factor, which is a favorite topic of all wrestling collectors, you know, that was the first real sort of public five-figure sale of a wrestling card. And then you go forward now and it's become much more common. We've had a six-figure sale. Right. It's just to believe that people are more and more comfortable putting value in this shows the viability of this market and how much it's grown in the last couple of years. Just I'm so excited to see the future here, especially as crypto bounces back. The market on Card Ladder is showing, you know, almost double digit growth in the last quarter. Like I start going through these sales charts on Card Ladder and like I was floored by how Elite was doing and how Select was doing and how Prism was doing. Like these cards are seemingly up across the board because not only is the market bouncing back, but I think people are more excited about wrestling cards as well.
Well, it's crazy as I was like thinking about this, and it's wild that we're like entering the third WrestleMania with Panini cards and the license there. And just, I think about, it just seems like we were just here, and I think we're getting to the point with WWE and Panini where there is a lineage and legacy with some of these sets. And you can, as you're thinking about them from a collector perspective, you can really sink your teeth in and do some really cool things. I know you touched on it a little bit, but like, how do you reflect on kind of the last 3 years of the Panini WWE relationship? Like, how would you describe it?
I mean, the relationship has been a roller coaster. Like, let's not mince words there. Like, I think the relationship itself has been a challenge. But I think the relationship that card collectors have with their products has been sort of seemingly a roller coaster as well. If you look at the start where it came out, like, and people were just on this high, the market was just so gigantic around Prism and the release of this new WWE license, and then sort of crashed because of all the factors we've discussed in this podcast a million times. And then it just sort of like came back up a little bit and just sort of stayed there. And now it's starting to creep up again. And, you know, when you look at how people have started to react to products that have released post lawsuit, like, you know, you're starting to see like wrestling collectors want Panini products to a point where the secondary market on wax is starting to reflect that. And, you know, I was talking about this on Twitter a couple of days ago, like if you go back to 2022, people literally just lost their shit about Prism in 2022. Like there's no way around that. Like people literally just, it's still the most controversial product you can talk about in WWE. But now for the first time ever, we're seeing another box start to creep up to that level. And it's a completely different feeling because the market is so different. You have 15 whatnot channels that are ripping nonstop. You have people on the secondary market looking to build their PCs to be, you know, a prominent collector in the space. And I think like Panini has fostered just this incredible growth because they've literally knocked it out of the park with almost every single product that they've released. And you know, I know there are Panini haters out there. I used to be one of them. And they cite, oh, well, the redemptions or the box cost or whatever. None of them are coming out and saying, wow, these products look like shit. Like they are all saying this stuff looks awesome. It's either too expensive or there's too many redemptions. There's other things that I think are driving, you know, sort of the feedback negatively. But the positive feedback is the photos are incredible. The designs look awesome. The autographs are, oh, you know, checklists are the best they've ever been. And like you're seeing names in these sets that have never been in a set before for, you know, since the vintage era, you know, like things like that. Panini has really brought back sort of this excitement around their products. And I think Topps was kind of on cruise control for a while. I love Topps. A lot of my collection is Topps. And I feel like, you know, I have to qualify this every time I talk about it because people get like, oh, you're just a Panini guy. Well, look at my shelf. There's a ton of Topps cards on it. But I don't think anybody with eyes is saying, wow, Panini has really come in and done a terrible job. Like their sets have been incredible. So that's kind of my thoughts on it.
Can you, just for anyone who's not aware, maybe help us understand like the current state and status of the Panini and WWE relationship? Like what can we expect as collectors and like the timeline?
Yeah, no, I'm going to preface this by saying, I'm not a lawyer, so that's number one. Number two, a lot of this is coming from secondary sources because we haven't had a true readout of what the settlement was. But just to go back quickly, and I'm going to give the TLDR version of this, but basically WWE canceled Panini's license coming out of the national convention last year, and it set in motion a number of lawsuits saying you can't cancel a contract. We've fulfilled all of these things. And for 6 months, there was no product that was released. There was, you know, Elite was the next on the calendar, was shelved. It was just released a month or two ago. Impeccable is just hitting shelves coming up here after WrestleMania, right before. And like, so you have these first two products now that they've come to a settlement, which means that for the relationship going forward, everybody should expect that Panini's relationship with WWE is back into a positive status. So they aren't necessarily giving us all the details like, oh, this is how long we're going to have it. This is kind of what's going to happen. But we can expect that, A, they're going to produce cards for the foreseeable future. They've closed the loopholes in which WWE was able to use to cancel the license. And that was the release of the NFT product. They've released Adrenaline on the TCG side, which were two loopholes that WWE called out. And we know that through the discovery of the lawsuit, we know that the next two products after Impeccable are going to be Chronicles and Immaculate before likely around summertime, maybe late summer, we start to see the first of the 2024 products, which will start with Prism all over again and then sort of like go through the regular stuff. I'm speculating because, again, no one's really been telling us, hey, this is the way it's going down. But I would venture a guess that we're going to get at least another year. So they will complete the 2024 products. It's rare you have a settlement where both sides don't come out sort of with a win. So I would guess, you know, originally their contract went through the end of 2025 products. And starting in 2026 products, it would go back to Fanatics, which was announced the week that Prism came out in 2022. Talk about trolling there. So I think right now it's a state of flux and collectors are worried, but I don't know if they really should be at this point. It's when we start to not see previews for 2024 Prism. Maybe that's where I start to get a little bit of a thought in the back of my mind saying, uh-oh, what's going on? But we're already almost midway through 2024. And I think we're getting to a spot now where we can feel confident they're going to finish this year and then probably start next year at the very least.
I wasn't sure we'd get to this point where it was like, all right, I think we're going to actually see this whole, the agreement and what was said. I think we're going to be able to see this the way through. I don't think there was a lot of moments during this where I wasn't sure of that. But I think based on just the interest and excitement before Fanatics came into the picture, my mentality, and it was for a small moment in time, but my mentality was like, this is going really well and there'll be a renewal. Obviously, like that's not happening. But I'm curious, like from a collector perspective, like these sets in this period of time, like we flash forward like 10 years from now, how do you think collectors will view, or maybe even, you can even share this from like a personal lens, but like how do you think these cards will be viewed in this whole history of wrestling cards? Like, do you think it could be a good thing, the fact that there'll only be 4 years of these, or do you think it's a bad thing? Like, where are you at?
Well, I think it kind of depends on how much longer Panini is able to produce cards, period. Fanatics is taking over everything in 2026. Like, they're going to take over NFL, NBA, and MLB they already have. So like the three major licenses in the sports, you know, sort of hobby will all be Fanatics. They also own a vault, an auction house. Like they have this like Thanos plan where they're completing their infinity gauntlet of stuff around the hobby. And eventually they're going to be able to snap Panini out of existence. But I think it's a little bit more complex than that, because if you look back at the way companies like Fleer or even Upper Deck to a degree, because Upper Deck really has lost a lot of their momentum past 2010. You know, the market still looks back very favorably on a lot of those cards. Like, exquisite cards are still the benchmark for this hobby. Like, as much as we want to believe that Prism Blacks and like, you know, Immaculate and Flawless Logo Mans and stuff like that are really like the benchmark for the hobby, it's just not true. Exquisite remains the granddaddy of all high-end products. And, you know, mostly because of, you know, all the ownership of Michael Jordan, the ownership of LeBron James as professional cards, you know, in professional uniforms with, you know, awesome patches and autographs. Like, that stuff is going to continue to have a lot of value in this hobby, even and well after Upper Deck ceases operations, if they ever do. So, I mean, like, when you think about now, okay, Panini is going to be gone, likely in the major sports. They may find ways to produce cards otherwise, but they'll be gone in UFC. They'll be gone in WWE. They'll be gone everywhere. How will the community look back on these cards? And I don't think people have a good understanding of what's going to happen. I don't necessarily have a prediction one way or the other, but if I had to look back at historical evidence, I think they'll look back pretty favorably. And, you know, you still look back at the Topps cards from wrestling. They still have a tremendous value in a lot of these areas. The vintage cards, you know, still have a tremendous value. So I think like the branding on the front of the card is likely going to matter less than the prestige of the release when it came out. That's kind of where I'm sitting.
Yeah, I think that's a fair perspective. And I think there's some, what I've learned, and it seems like this is expanded over the last, you know, few years with the Panini license. It just seems like there's been less isolated and more ways to enjoy wrestling cards and the community around it. I know there's a topic on maybe grinds both of our gears that I think we'll probably hit on. But before we get on that topic, I'm curious, like, what do you enjoy? Someone who's so dedicated and passionate and in the weeds on all things wrestling cards on a regular basis, like, what are you enjoying most about wrestling cards right now?
I mean, I think a lot of the stuff around wrestling cards has really been sort of, I'm glad they're back, right? So I'm glad we get Elite. I'm glad the wait is over. Impeccable looks like an absolutely incredible product. I tend to like think about wrestling cards with more of a rose-colored glasses probably than most, just because like through the beginning of my hobby presence, I've always been exceptionally negative. And I realize that it takes a lot of energy to be like that. And I think, you know, looking at this and the way that wrestling cards have performed, man, like I had very low expectations for Elite. I think it came out and really blew me away. I was shocked at how good the product turned out. I think Impeccable, just seeing the first few cases broken, I had real concerns over a number of things. They seem to be gorgeous cards. you know, we can see that there's already impact of what the lawsuit has forced them to do. I think there's speculations of chopped allocations and how distributors are getting product. But, you know, overall, the products themselves have been so awesome. And so I'm collecting, you know, one person, right? So I collect Becky Lynch. That's all I collect. But I've been engaging in some speculation here because it's fun. And it's like, you see the market is up. And so when the market goes up, your desire to sort of like creep into other areas starts to set in. So I've been buying a few things here and there. And it's been awesome to like get, you know, some on-card stuff in Elite. It's been awesome to pick up a bunch of older cards like from Roman Reigns and some of the other individuals that are literally at the top of WWE and I think are tremendously undervalued because of, you know, how they are perceived in the hobby prior to Panini's taking over. And so I think like that's really driven me to sort of look other directions. People like Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Undertaker, like these Mount Rushmore type guys. And so that's been a lot of fun. And unfortunately, like, you know, I've always had a very competitive relationship with some of the other Becky Lynch collectors. Well, you know, and I've been able to work with a few of them to acquire some new grails. And like, I know that's a touchy word lately, but you know, for me, it's like, you know, I've been able to pick up some of the top cards of my PC in the last probably 4 months. Just insane to me. Like cards that, you know, like the Prism 1/1 autograph from 2022 hadn't surfaced in 2 years. Cherry Collectibles in Australia just randomly pulls it out of a box. We're able to work out a deal and I've got this centerpiece to my Prism collection. It's an awesome card. Then, you know, for the first time in 2 years, a gold shimmer from Prism First Off the Line surfaces online. I'm like, oh my God, it's like everything is coming up Gelman here. So I was able, with the help of Matt Elvis, who's exiting, you know, I was able to complete a full 2023 Prism Rainbow, which is one of very few that are out there. I'm one card away now from completing a 22 Prism Rainbow now. I now have a full 22 autograph rainbow. I have a couple of new logos coming in. Like everything is really going awesome. And it's good to have, you know, a community that supports it right now, which is always great. It's hard to get excited without other people getting excited with you. And so, you know, it's good to see that there's so much content out there. There's so much going around in the community. And for the first time in months, it feels like it isn't 100% negative, which is really good stuff.
It sounds like it's been an expensive year so far for Adam Gelman.
Yes, it definitely has.
One thing that I want to touch on that I just feel like you'd be a really good person to like maybe provide some clarity around. And I think so much of like we think about like Panini and we try to cross over like if this is happening in football or basketball and I'm wanting to get into wrestling, like I can start like buying cards because of these growth trajectories some of these products have had over the course of time when the community as a whole maybe doesn't see it that way because they've been so isolated with just collecting wrestling cards for so long. And like one of the topics that I want to dig into based on what you've said is just this, like you mentioned Stone Cold. Can you describe to people listening who are maybe just getting started wrestling cards or interested in wrestling cards, like the dynamic between like active roster performers and their cards and the legend side? And because like we are told kind of with football cards, for instance, you know, we don't want to collect post playing day stuff of players. That's just like the manufacturer putting them into sets to try to bolster the product and
trigger alert. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious because like we had that with The Rock, right? Like The Rock, you know, was a legend but his card price is still, you know, commanded up at the top of value. And now we're seeing him back. So he's kind of like an exceptional case, but so much of like what drives these products are these guys who we haven't seen on screen in years. Like, how do you describe kind of that dynamic? Because I feel like it's unique with wrestling cards.
Well, I think it's unique because how do you define playing days for wrestling? Like it's not really a traditional, you know, seasonality of the progression of somebody's career, right? Like, The Rock is back. He's, you know, in his 50s now. And Stone Cold just had a match at WrestleMania 38. So, like, technically, like, you know, he's – are they really non-playing days? But I digress a little bit here. I think it's – I think that mentality is weird to begin with. Honestly, I'm just – I'm not a subscriber there. I know there are people who are – collect how you want. I get it. But for me personally, I would venture to say that even though Hulk Hogan hasn't had a match in years and Andre the Giant's been dead for a number of years, sadly, you know, their cards still have tremendous value and they're still producing them, right? Like, they still have prison cards. They still have stuff like Macho Man Randy Savage has unfortunately been dead a long time as well, but his cards still sell really well. Like, all of that stuff is because wrestling is more of a nostalgia sport any other sport on the planet. And I like being able to connect cards to your youth has always been sort of this major sort of discussion point that people have had in this hobby. And it always is weird to me, like, how much people vicariously live their youth through their collecting of cards. But wrestling takes that to a gigantic level of like, oh, I'm going to go and collect the Ultimate Warrior because I love, you know, seeing him run down the aisle, you know, as quickly as possible. So, like, I think, like, the playing days understanding of wrestling just doesn't apply here. Mm. And, you know, there are people who want to argue that it probably does. But, you know, the top cards in a lot of these products are The Rock and Stone Cold and Hulk Hogan and The Undertaker. I mean, a lot of those guys are retired or semi-retired. And, you know, one could argue that Roman Reigns is also semi-retired at this point. But I think, like, the challenge that we're facing here is that wrestling cards is a very niche market, and there's niches within the niche, which is even crazier. And I think if you look at guys like Hogan and Flair and those people that wrestled, you know, through the mid 80s and early 90s, and then you transition into the Attitude Era with Austin and Rock, and then into the modern era with Cena, and then, like, you know, the Reality Era, and then you're into guys like Roman Reigns and Becky Lynch and all of the people that we collect. You know, there's so much for everybody, and wrestling caters to such a wide audience that it's really hard for people to separate the nostalgia of their childhood watching these titans of industry versus now when they're still on TV and they're still contributing. And, like, you know, there's rumors that Hulk Hogan's going to be at WrestleMania. There's rumors that Stone Cold Steve Austin's going to be at WrestleMania this year. So they're still very visible. And I think the difference is, well, guys come back for Hall of Fame ceremonies all the time in football and, you know, number retirements, you know, whatever. So it's kind of similar to that. But I think the wrestling collector just has a completely different mindset on that. I don't subscribe to it in football or baseball either. And I think the retrofractors in Bowman sort of speak to that. People don't necessarily subscribe 100% to that in other sports as well. But, you know, it's kind of whatever floats your boat and doesn't sink mine, I'm okay with. So
I can't have a Gelman on an episode here and it to be all like rainbows and unicorn and we've got right. the New Day's power of positivity just coursing through all of our veins and we're eating.
It's WrestleMania time, man.
We're eating. I got my bowl of Bootios here on the side that I got to eat. But I'm curious, like, it's not all roses. Like, I know there's a topic that we want to talk about and I'm sure there's more, but just like, what are things that are happening right now in the space that don't get you excited and maybe might be just like roadblocks to having as great of an experience as you possibly could have with wrestling cards right now?
Yeah. I mean, like, if you had talked to me 6 months ago, like, our entire social media landscape was fractured. And I think, like, I don't know what the shift has been. There's been a detente of some sort, but I think, like, for a while, you know, social media and wrestling cards sort of mirrored social media and wrestling and politics and everything. There was just this insane tribalism that existed. And it's part of social media. Like, I've never been the kind of person that's like, everybody has to gather around the campfire and you know, cliche sing kumbaya. Like, that's never been my approach. I'm a very opinionated individual. And when people sort of like start trampling on your garden, you gotta, you know, shake your fist at them a little bit. But the main thing here is, like, that has sort of translated into, like, these weird situations that have been happening across the hobby from a sales perspective or non-sales perspective, if you will. But it's like it has roots in this last 6 month period, where, you know, obviously there were two camps, and you know, I mean, there are people that were in the middle and sort of trying to not put a foot in either camp. But I think, you know, I've always said, like, if we all stayed in our lane and we all just sort of like said, you know, this is my lane, I'm going to focus on it, there wouldn't really be any of these huge explosions on Twitter or social media. And I think, like, I said, like, as long as that happens, I have all these people on mute. I have all these people are not communicating with me directly. So unless somebody sends me their crap, I'm not responding to it. And I think for a while, that didn't happen. Like, there was constant, like, shots across the bow. And out of that bred this weird situation that is going on eBay, which is basically, if there is a one-of-one wrestling card that's big enough to garner attention of the community, there's, I've labeled them the auction terrorists. There's a terrorist who will go in and create fake accounts posing as me, and shill bid these cards up to a point where they can't be sold. I know, Brett, you've had that happen to you a number of times with your auctions. I'm sure there are people out there, sellers, who have consigned materials for people out there who's had an impact here. They're this person, and we don't know who they are, but they send just the most god-awful messages posing as me to people. They make fun of my kids and my wife, and, like, you name it, because they stalk my Facebook. It's weird. They stalk my Twitter. They're making fun of just the most awful, awful things in the most awful context. And, you know, you can't have a platform without trolls. If you're on these podcasts, and Brett, I'm sure you've had your fair share. Like, if you are on a podcast, on a video, putting your opinion in the most minor way possible out on the internet, the rule is somebody's going to disagree with you, and probably violently. And I think this is kind of this overreaction, which, you know, instead of coming to me directly, because I'm very accessible, clearly, and just saying, like, hey, I don't like you, I don't like your opinions, whatever, standard troll shit. Like, this guy is sabotaging auctions on eBay and causing people who have no affiliation with me, have no affiliation with anything that I've put out over the last year plus of my presence since this whole fracture has happened. Like, they just want to watch the world burn, and it is so unfortunate.
Yeah, it's not fun. It's disappointing. And I don't know, but my perspective always is, like, I always treat the hobby as kind of an escape, and I treat my fandom with wrestling
as
an escape, like many. And then, like, the fusion of wrestling cards is, like, the ultimate escape to me. And it's just unfortunate that you've got bad actors coming in and trying to sabotage it. And I think, like, obviously, like, my own personal use case been impacted on the sales side, so I've had to make adjustments on where or how I sell my cards. But yeah, it's unfortunate, because, like, you take a couple steps back, and you're just like, this is wrestling cards, everybody. Like, come on,
yeah.
Like, this is, so I don't know. Like, I hope there is some sort of resolution to this, because it is supposed to be fun. And it just sucks when you have certain individuals in the space that are they're ruining it for everybody.
I mean, there's a lot of fragile people out there, like, fragile people out there. And, like, taking offense to somebody's opinion that they're sharing online and turning it into this seems like the most fragile experience that I could ever experience. Like, why would you take this much time to go through it? And even if it's 30 seconds to do this, it's still 30 seconds too much. Like, and we all say, like, these people are in their basements banging, like, I've seen people who are well-adjusted individuals just go to a really weird space on social media. And it's just like, why? Like, what do you hope to accomplish? And, like, it doesn't impact me. It doesn't impact what I say. I'm clearly there's the account on Twitter is like, tell me to shut up, I'll only be stupid louder or whatever. Right. So, like, I think the I'm not going away. Like, this, my day job is not cards. Like, you know, my day job is my day job. My family is the second most important thing. Like, cards are an escape, as you said. And, like, I love coming here. I spend enough time on social media because, you know, I work in marketing and I work in technology. So I'm always on the computer, and I love seeing the way people interact with technology. especially as we continue to grow in this hobby, it's mirrored a lot of the spaces that I'm covering in my day job. And so like, it's an escape to sort of see how things change across this vast landscape that has become one of the most popular sort of destinations for people to blow off steam. And then you have people out there who are like, no, this has to be somebody's undoing. Like I have to be the person to take this individual down, even though they don't know who I am. I'll never admit who I am. Like all these other things, like that never I never understood that. Like, and to be honest with you, if you look at a lot of the content that I've made, it's solely for educational purposes. Like, there's opinion involved in it because there's opinion and bias in everything. But the videos that we post on Wrestling Trading Cards YouTube were all originally meant to be educational. Then we're bringing in tons of voices from around the hobby, yourself included, others that have really driven a narrative that has been positive and growth friendly to the industry. And on the other side, you have individuals who are like, no, I want to keep the walls closed in. I want it to be small. I don't want boxes to get more expensive. I don't want singles to get more expensive. I want my hobby. I don't want it to explode like cards have. Like, I get those sentiments. Like, I get why people feel that way, because it's hard to want to pay more money for something that gives you entertainment versus, you know, personal or job satisfaction. And so I understand why people don't want things to get more expensive. On the same token, that rising tide floats everybody's boat, gives you more equity in your collection, gives you more ability to make moves, get the cards you want. So in addition to that, like, it's fun to see things go nuts and to be one of the early adopters. That's why the Apple community has become such a poster child for a lot of this, is because the early adopters were seen as like these people who really were on the forefront of this technology boom. And like, it's crazy that people don't want to see that in cards, or more specifically, wrestling cards. And then there's all of these sort of like misinformation that's out there about like what's going to happen with the license, like what happens when Topps comes back, like how will things snap back to the way that they were? Guys, like, just enjoy it, like go along for the ride and have a good time. And that's really what I've sort of shifted my persona to be. Since Sports Cards and Censored was conceived in controversy, now it's like, hey, I love wrestling cards. I want wrestling cards to be more successful. Everything I do is all about that. And people take offense to that because, oh, you're a shill, or you're this, or whatever you want to do. But I'm just having fun.
So we've covered a lot of ground in a short time. Back to WrestleMania. We've got the, as the confetti falls, or maybe no confetti falls when the fireworks go out on Sunday night. What are we seeing on the screen? What is your prediction for how WrestleMania 40 in Philadelphia ends?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those, like I said, going into the Royal Rumble, like we didn't have a lot of understanding of what was going to happen. And then all the predictable things happened, right? So we were now, not all of them, because there was an injury that prevented one of them from happening, but like seeing Bayley win the Women's Royal Rumble and seeing Cody Rhodes win the men's, like two of the big favorites, no one like really expected any different. And things that they were foreshadowing for weeks leading up to it, right? Can Cody Rhodes become a two-time Royal Rumble winner? Like, they were showing those videos weeks ahead of time. And, you know, I think it's hard for the wrestling booking community, Triple H and his goons, to sort of figure out, do we do the predictable thing and let Cody finish his story, or do we do the Vince Russo thing and swerve everybody, bro? Like, I think it's a hard line to toe, but they've done such a tremendous job that I think there's two major questions that everybody has. One, can Roman Reigns retain and not lose the audience? That's number one. I think everybody is so invested in this Cody Rhodes finishing the story thing that, you know, it's going to be really hard to have Roman retain and not lose a significant portion of the goodwill that has been built up. Now, again, wrestling's all about the heat. So like, it's not about getting cheers for the babyface. Like, that's a misconception in wrestling for a long time. You know, we've been conditioned to live for the giant pops, and you know, there really isn't a bigger one that's going to happen than when Cody Rhodes wins. But I think the heat is what drives wrestling. And if you can find a way to get Roman that heat and have him retain the title, I would like to see that. Now, I'm also not a Cody Rhodes fan. So, like, and I'm a huge Roman Reigns fan, which is now something I never thought I would say. So I kind of want to see my tribal chief retain. But I think this is the year that Cody probably finishes the story. I think there's going to be revolts in the street if he doesn't. People setting the seats on fire, which is ironically probably what they want. On the women's side, and I think Seth, I think you got to give the belt to Drew. Like, God, he is on a historic run. Like, every time they put a microphone in his hand, something magical happens. And then eventually lead up to CM Punk coming back and eventually getting his title run. So I think, like, that's I think, an inevitability. The first main event on night one with the tag team match, I think, is almost irrelevant. Like, I mean, like, it's as crazy as it is. Like, it's going to be awesome to see, and I can't wait for it. But I think the outcome of the second match is what everybody cares about. I think Bayley is going to win. I'm as much of a fan as I am of Io Sky and everything. I don't think she is. You can't put the championship on the secondary member of the group. Like, I never understood that. And I think Io Sky has really been done dirty in a lot of ways with this championship reign. I think there's been some issues and stuff like that have probably prevented it from being as successful as they had hoped. But, you know, I never saw a lot of entertainment in her championship reign, which is so unfortunate because she was great in NXT. And then on the women's side with the Raw, listen, I'm biased, but as much as I would love to see Becky Lynch beat Rhea Ripley, let me state here, I don't think it's going to happen, and that's okay. Like, I think they are going to put on an absolutely incredible match. They're going to be given a lot of time, and I think Rhea Ripley will establish herself as the face of the women's division for years to come. Now, next year, hopefully, WrestleMania will be in Minnesota, where I live, and that will be awesome. We should find out today or tomorrow, likely, if that's going to happen. And I think we could have, depending on how fences are mended with Brock Lesnar, we could have Brock Lesnar's retirement match. We could have Tiffany Stratton, who's from Prior Lake, Minnesota, get a featured match at WrestleMania. So I think setting up things to happen for Rhea Ripley to really be a force over the next year, I think is going to be a major factor here. I think Becky's contract is up, so maybe there's some finagling that has to happen there. But man, like, I'm a humongous Rhea Ripley fan. Like, she is an absolute megastar. And I think she has a long, she's only like 24 or 25 or whatever it is, like crazy young. Like, she's got a long career ahead of her. But there was two matches that she hasn't had yet. One of them was against Becky. And I was laughing when people thought this was going to turn into a triple threat or a close four way. But one of them was with Becky, and the other one's with Bianca Belair. So I think, you know, you got to set up that match where Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley get to eventually face off. I think Mommy holds the title for a while. So, you know, we'll see some title changes, I'm sure. I think Seth's going to lose. I think there's probably going to be a cash in. I don't know. But the tag titles will probably be moved around. Maybe Gunther loses. Like, no one's really been talking about that. And, like, he's on a historic run, too. So, man, I'm so excited. Anything can happen. And that's why you go into these like this. That's why the booking is so good here. Because no one knows what the fuck is going to happen.
So you left the door open for my tribal chief to retain. But I don't think it's likely. But I don't think so either. I'm holding out hope. But always, like, my mentality is whatever happens and whatever's going on, it's all of this is to eventually turn Roman Reigns babyface because you just got to do it.
I just can't see it. He's been so good. And like the whole Cody crybabies thing is so true. Like, I have been waiting for Roman Reigns versus The Rock since Royal Rumble, where Sami Zayn hit him in the back with the chair. Like that was when I thought this match was going to happen. I guess it almost did. And like, I cannot believe that we did not get that. Like, we Rock isn't getting younger. Cody has many years left on his deal. Like, don't have him win the Royal Rumble. Like, it's that simple. Like, and for some reason, CM Punk's injury probably complicated all of this. But like, I really wanted to see Roman Reigns versus The Rock. I think we'll see that probably in Saudi Arabia or something, which is unfortunate. But I think we'll see it. We're going to see Cody Rhodes versus The Rock. We're going to see The Rock have a significant portion here. And that's cool. That's cool in its own right. Like, I'm excited for that.
Yes, for sure. This has been fun. Before I let you get out of here, what do you want to plug? What's going on? You're always up to a lot.
Yeah. So for those of you who were part, and Brett, you were as well, we've talked about it here before. For those of you who were part of the National Convention last year in Chicago, we are going to be doing it again in Cleveland. So Main Event 2 will be happening in Cleveland. The difference is this time we are an official NSCC event. So we will be inside of the trade nights that have been announced. Basically, the difference used to be that Card Collector 2 had his trade night, which turned into this massive like experience that people were having. And to the point where lines are out the door and whatever. And the National has sort of embraced the trade night culture, which I've been asking for years, and say, we're going to not have just one trade night. We're going to have three. And even better than that, we're going to give, like, Main Event last year had so many people there and was so successful. They were like, we need to give that opportunity to more collecting groups within the hobby, more niche collector groups. So I would expect that as we get into these trade nights, there will be sections of those rooms that are dedicated to specific parts of the hobby, which I cannot be more excited about. And Main Event 2 will happen in one of those trade nights on Friday. And we're excited to do it again. We have Ryan Bannister from RBI Crew 7 and Chad from Sports Car Junction. And they are our main sponsors. And because we don't have to go out in the middle of Cleveland, which is such a hard place to find a venue, because we don't have to do that, we can then invest the money back into the event. I've talked to Suze from CGC. We're going to have them as a part of the event. Like, there's going to be so much going on for this thing. And I just hope everybody is ready, because we're really going to blow the doors off the place.
Looking forward to that. It's always fun catching up and talking wrestling cards. Adam, we will be doing this again at some point on the other side. Really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Brett. You guys, you do such a good job. And I hope you guys join his Patreon group, because there's a lot of great discussion here. I know he doesn't necessarily plug it as much as he probably should.
He's my Adam Gelman right here is my Paul Heyman, my advocate.
There we go. Oh, we look similar. Like, here, I can even like take off my hat. We can let you. We can. I can be your wise man. But yeah, the Patreon group's been fun. I just discovered you can put comments on posts, which is awesome in the app. So yeah, just I joined the Patreon group. I would love to have more wrestling collectors join on, and we have a few already, and it's been fun. So
appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you again.
All right, talk to you soon.